I guess so.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh boy. I don't have the paper in front of me to do the intro.
Just say welcome to Indie Authors Roundtable. This is the after show. Your host.
Hi guys, this is the after show. That was Carol just talking. This is R.L. Jackson and Carol P. Roman, and this is basically our after show where we're going to talk about, you know, the book industry, our projects, and past interviews that we've had. So, Carol, I don't know if you want to go ahead and start somewhere, but this is basically like a free-for-all show. We don't have a structure, as you could clearly tell, but just basically us talking and hopefully you listening and maybe, you know, helping people along the way.
You know, it's funny. This is like, you know, you called it a free-for-all, but this is really an extension of what you and I do at least three times a week. And it's funny to RL because we've never really met, and yet I, you know, we're on the phone so many times. We met on a thread on Goodreads because we both didn't like the way people were treating other people. There was a lot of bullying on that thread. And I think it was Julie, who's an associate of ours, and you set up a new thread on Goodreads, and we have an open forum. And then from that, we just started talking to each other because we couldn't get enough. We couldn't type fast enough, right? Would you say that was the reason why we exchanged? You know, and I've learned so much from you. And, you know, I like to think that you've learned from me too.
Oh, definitely. Definitely learned a lot. Like before, you know, like I think I've told the story on another show we used to do last year, but like the embarrassment of it all was we were talking about, you know, some of the crap going on in some of these threads. And at the same time, I was getting ready to release my very first book and reading all these books to try to help myself prepare to, you know, publish for the first time with not a penny in my pocket. Sadly, the situation is still the same in a lot of cases, but I read this book called Navigating Indie World, and I'm taking notes, and I'm just, you know, all into it, and it's this great book, and I'm talking to you, and I'm talking to Julie, and we're, you know, just doing our thing, and it doesn't dawn on me till, like, I don't know, like, months later that the book that I was, you know, basically doing a blueprint for my own success was written by you guys. So that goes to show, like, I didn't care about the author. I just was, you know, into the material. And it was so embarrassing. I was like, oh, my God, you mean you're Carol P. Roman and she's Julie A. Gerber. And it just, like, I had a super blonde moment. But it just goes to show, like, there was no ego. Nobody was, you know, puffing up their chest saying, oh, I've done this and we've done that. Or, you know, shoving stuff down your face to the fact where I didn't even know. I just knew I was getting good information and I was meeting awesome people. And it just was kind of cool how that happened, although embarrassing. But, yeah, this is where we are today.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because Julie and I, you know the story of how we wrote the book. I was asked to write an article for the children's book review. And she asked me, you know, Bianca Schultz, who has a terrific blog where she reviews children's books, and they've featured me a lot, you know. And she asked me to contribute an article on five things that every indie author should know. So I was writing it through a Google document. You know, Google document you could share. I'm comfortable with Google documents. So I was writing up my 5 points, and Julie, who's another person who did my social media, and I had never even met her either. I mean, I've subsequently met her once, but I asked her just to double check and see if I covered what I had to cover. And she added some stuff to it, and then I published the article, and then I went back to Julie, and we corrected something, and then she sent it back to me, and before you knew it, we had, like, you know, 5,000 words. And I said, you know what, Julie, why don't we turn this into a book? And we literally wrote that book in 1 week and published it. And of course it's a little out of date now because, you know, the rules have changed, and so, you know, this business changes daily. You know, what worked a year ago is not going to work today.
And, yeah, I definitely can agree and say I see that. Like, it's kind of sad. Like, I mean, you would think the changes would be positive changes, but they're not all positive changes. And, you know, 2 years ago when I put my debut book out, I, like I said, didn't have a following. I didn't have fans. I didn't have money to advertise. And that first month I still made like $600 in sales for my book, which to me, you know, the layperson, I'm thinking, oh, that's pretty decent for a nobody to make that much. But here, you know, I just released a book shortly and I didn't make anywhere near that, you know, but that's because the algorithms have changed again. The rules have changed for the maybe 100th time since, you know, that first book came out. It's just a lot of things happening in publishing right now that you have to bend and adapt in order to succeed. You cannot just dig your heels into the old way of doing things and think it's going to work. It's just not, you know, going to happen. And along with that, you have book pirates and, you know, all kinds of stuff happening in the book world right now that are making it, you know, that's making it hard for us to even sell books, even if you are doing all the right things.
You're right, RL. And it's almost like you have to be like jumping through the raindrops. You know, because, you know, you talked about some of the things, like when you first published your book, you could write to people on Amazon and ask them to review your book. That didn't cost you anything but time. You could look around for blogs and ask people to review your book, and that got word of your book. That was an inexpensive way to get word of your book out there. You could even hire an inexpensive blog tour and, you know, get your book out there. Like, there were a lot of different ways that we had to publicize books that was either very inexpensive or free or an exchange. And you know, of course, the more reviews you have, you and I both know, the more reviews you have, the more you will sell a book, because then it looks like the book is popular and people read the reviews, people follow reviewers, and then all of a sudden they changed it where you couldn't ask for a review anymore. And then they got, you know, Amazon kicked out tons of reviewers so that all of our lists that we compiled were garbage at that point, you know, or trash. If you're on the West Coast, you say trash, right? So, you know, all those lists became obsolete. And, you know, then blog tours started going out of business. You know, all of a sudden we had tons and tons of bloggers that are no longer blogging because their reviews weren't, you know, being featured. You know, they couldn't put their review on Amazon, so they felt obsolete, and, you know, things changed. And then you're combating, again, there's no protection for us with those pirates. You and I, we hired, I think, three, we ended up, of course, for people who don't know, we ended up doing an anthology together. I'm really proud of our anthology. You know, mm-hmm. It also was born from a phone conversation. It was like, let's do it. Like our magazine, our radio show, we talk and look for solutions, and you and I both came up with something, and I want to just say how we came up with it. It was you who said, you're my, you know, my brain here, RL, you've got your finger really on the pulse because you're on social media and you listen to what people say. You said to me, I think the model is moving to smaller books. Do you remember that conversation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you said,
for sure.
I think it's not only cheaper to put out and it's easier to put out a smaller book, but these anthologies where you utilize everybody's social media. If you get 8 authors in an anthology and everybody contributes their social contacts, you're getting 8 times the exposure, which means that you have mm-hmm. 8 more ways of selling your book. And I agreed with you, and we whipped together our anthology. We got 8 people and we put together our anthology, and we hired, I think, 2 inexpensive blog tours. And, oh, I forgot where I was going with that. But, you know, the point was, even with that, the piracy. All of a sudden, I'm getting notes, and you were the first one who said it. You're getting all these invitations from people saying they can't download the book on Booksprout, and would you send a Mobi mm-hmm. copy? And you were the one who mm-hmm. said, I think they're pirates, because everybody can download from Booksprout. Maybe you want to explain what Booksprout is?
Yeah, so Booksprout is kind of like it's a place where people go to read and review arcs from authors. And Booksprout has a platform where you can go and sign up, and you can just basically look at, they have thousands of books there placed by publishers and authors, and you can choose to read these books in exchange for your honest review that you post on Booksprout, Amazon, Nook, wherever, you know, you want the reviews to end up. So when I signed up for the service, one thing that Booksprout did, which was kind of weird, was they sent an email explaining that they not only they have a known pirate list, so people they know that pirate books, they block automatically from being able to get the books. But, you know, of course, a pirate can get a new email address. You know, it's not a
right.
big deal for them. But what Booksprout said was you may receive emails stating that they can't download your book. We advise you not to send your book to them in any format via email. Refer them back to us. And, you know, as I was going through social media like I do every day, I noticed that people were complaining of the same thing, like a bunch of people, the same people, matter of fact, were saying that they could not download their book via Booksprout. People were like, oh, yeah, I know that person. They're a known pirate. So that's, you know, something that they're doing, that they're trying to get a hold of your book so they could go and put it up on some site. And, you know, they don't even make money from the book if, you know, they even have your book sometimes. Because sometimes they just want your credit card so they could steal from you. But they make the money from the traffic for, you know, from everybody going there to look for other books. So they get the money from the traffic and the ads that run on the site, and they make money that way. It's a whole huge scheme, and it's a big thing going on right now. I don't want to name the person nor the website, but this person was, you know, they were basically put on the spotlight recently, and a bunch of us authors, and I was a part of one of those, you know, those authors, band together when this person opened up a GoFundMe, and they said, hey, I think I'm going to be sued because of this, and I want to raise $10,000. I could fight the legal author who owns their copyright, you know, and basically he wants to be able to fight them in court because he's getting sued for breaking the law. Well, we shut that down in like 10 hours, like between everybody tweeting and leaving messages on GoFundMe. He raised, I think he raised like $3,000 in those 10 hours. The author that is suing him, and, you know, the flip side of that coin, all the authors are supporting him, and he's raised 20 of the $30,000 he was looking for in 24 hours. So that goes to show that authors are sick and tired of being taken advantage of, and they're not going to just lay down and take it while you steal from us and tell us that we're not owed our money for our hard work. You know, and this person, they've opened a church and they've done all kinds of shady things to try and justify what they've done. But there are things like that happening that makes it harder for authors to make a living and continue to
produce.
Well,
that's just what I wanted to say, RL, that they're destroying the voice of culture. These people may think that, you know, it's all about them making money, but what they're doing is they're silencing talent. In other words, all these indie authors, we're in the middle of a renaissance. This is a real renaissance. This is such a populist movement, because what's happened is when CreateSpace and Lulu or whatever, you know, Ingram opened it up where you could self-publish, not vanity publish, but self-publish, when they opened it up so that people who would submit books and wouldn't get, like me, I've submitted my books to many agents and publishing houses, and they'd be ignored. So what this did was it gave people like me or you a chance to actually publish a book. And I think, you know, if you read the reviews on Bulwark and Crashing Enemy and of course, all my children's books, because, you know, I write under two names, Carol P. Roman and Britt London. You know, if you read The Knowing, people are saying things like they're comparing it to Stephen King. You know, Stephen King meets the Grimm brothers, which is pretty amazing. But if I can't afford to publish because I'm not making money, my voice as a writer is silenced. And so readers are stuck reading whoever it is being churned out by the traditional publishing houses. So when they support these illegal people that are stealing bread and butter from the authors, they are silencing the voice of indie authors. And it's just a pity, because if readers are special people. Readers are people that want to expand their mind. They want to try new things. I love the readers. I think the readers are what, that's who we write for, right? That's who we want to impress. Those are the people we're looking. And when they support these illegal operations, they're killing basically the hand that's going to feed them this information, because we can't afford to keep publishing and not making money to keep on we're not getting advances, we're not getting royalties. You know, our royalties have been severely cut by all the big, you know, they've added these giant print charges. So my royalties have gone from 50% to 30% or 20%. You know, like in every way, it's becoming less and less profitable to self-publish. But it's, you know, we're finding ways to keep doing it because we love it.
Yeah, I have to agree. And the thing is the readers, they hold a lot of power. And so do authors. Like there was a comment left in a group online. I can't remember. I know it was a Facebook group, and there was somebody saying, you know, that if all authors were to stand together and do something about, you know, some of the things happening with Amazon, you know, we could, you know, potentially make a difference. And somebody left a message saying, oh, we're nothing to them, and blah, 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 blah. And I left a message saying that's not true at all. Like, we may be a small part of the money that comes into that place, but, you know, billions of dollars are coming in every year just from being an author. And I don't care how big a company is, you don't want an arm that's bringing you that much money to disappear, regardless of how, you know, big or small that chunk is, it's still a chunk. You're not going to just ignore that. And I saw the proof in that where, you know, the way they took down that pirate effort to try and raise money and, you know, threw all their support behind an author who was fighting for essentially all of our rights. Look what they were able to do. So you can't tell me that we don't have power to make a difference when it comes to a giant like Amazon. And readers definitely have the power because that's all Amazon cares about is the actual readers and the customer service.
The consumers.
If those readers.
Right.
And those consumers say, hey, I'm not dealing with you because you're treating these people unfairly. Guess how fast things will change over there for everybody if people were to do that. But if everyone has this defeated attitude that it's pointless or worthless than me and nothing's ever going to happen, which brings me to, you know, people like my friend Robin Crawford, who started a company called Eden Books, and it's kind of like an answer to some of these issues with Amazon. No, they're not anywhere as big as them, and nor they're trying to be, but we have to start throwing support behind the smaller independent bookstores online and in, you know, physical stores, and start going to Nook and start buying books on Apple Books. You have to give support to these other outlets, because if not, and, you know, they shut down, then we only have one option, or maybe two if you want to sell books from your own web store, but that comes with a whole nother, you know, can of worms. But you have to be able to fight and give other people support so that it's more fair across the board, I think. You can't just lay down and take whatever comes your way.
Well, as individuals, you don't have much, but if you, you know, as a group, we hold a certain, you know, a powerful amount of weight. You know, as we're getting closer, do you want to read a little bit from your newest book? I think it'd be nice if you read, you know, a page or two.
Okay. Yeah, I guess because we did discuss, you know, what we're going to do with these after shows is we're going to try and talk about some current events, and then we're going to talk about our project. And, you know, leave you with an excerpt of one of our books. And I was volunteered to do mine.
you were drafted.
So it's going to, I was drafted to do, read a page or so of mine. And this is The Craving, which is a part of the Bulwark anthology written by Britt London. and my story, should I read the blurb and then the excerpt?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so the blurb for my story is, Savannah Daniels is looking forward to spending alone time with her longtime boyfriend, Marshall. Everything during this fun-filled spring break was moving along fine until his awkward cousin, Stefano, and his equally weird girlfriend, Sheena, decided to crash the party. It didn't take a college graduate to realize something was definitely up with these two blood-sucking intruders, and it isn't long before their true intentions about what they are and what they want become clear. Savannah is powerless to stop their attack on Marshall, and with capabilities passed down from her grandmother, she finds the tools she needs to stop them and hopefully prevent Marshall's transitioning. When all three disappear before she can act, Savannah jumps into high gear, tracking their every move. Finally, her journey takes her to Bulwark, Georgia, where she learns things are equally as complicated there, and more than just vampires go bump in the night. So if you didn't get from that description, it is about vampires and things in Bulwark. Bulwark is kind of a supernatural town hidden from society, so lots of different things and different entities take place in that small town. I'm just going to read a couple paragraphs, because I hate the sound of my voice, from Chapter 3, and it's called Wherever You Go. Savannah rolled over in her bed and reached her arm out, feeling only sheets. There was no mound of Marshall there. She sat up and looked at the clock on the bedside table. It showed 4 a.m. Maybe he was using the bathroom, she thought. The night before came crashing back to her as if a horrible nightmare, and she never wished had been truer in her life. Her heart rate increased instantly, and she shot out of bed. Marshall, she cried out. There wasn't any need to be quiet. The only other person in the building was 2 stories down, so they had the floor to themselves. She took off down the hall and made a beeline for the bathroom. After she burst in, she searched the stalls. No Marshall. Savannah ran down the hall and raced down the stairs that led to the living room. The breeze blowing in confirmed that the front door hung wide open. As she jumped down the final few steps, her worst fear was realized. She watched Marshall walk across the quad with Stefano and Sheena on either side of them. Marshall, she bellowed. He didn't even look back, but Stefano did. Please, he called out. Come out here after him. I implore you, he threatened. Her throat tightened and the tears welled in her eyes. And that's my excerpt. I'm going to stop right there and continue the show.
People are saying all kinds of exciting things about it. I mean, I think the anthology as a whole has been received really well. And, you know, I think that it's a little bit outside of the box. I think that each one of us took something and made it just a little bit different. And it seems that everything's pretty formulaic. And I like to think that we hit it out of the park with that, that we're not. I think every one of the books in our anthology is just a little different. I want to read one excerpt from a review. Hold on. Oh, wow, this book. I seriously started reading it because I love the cover so much. And I want to add, by the way, RL did all the covers on the books. She did a fabulous job. I didn't look at the blurb, so I had no idea what it was about. What an awesome read. It starts out on a lonely, dark college campus, and from there, strap in for a wild ride in this novella that I never expected with each page I turned. Savannah turns out to be a witch who is soon fighting vampires, werewolves, and I'm not even going to continue. But it just, you know, glowing. And this is a verified purchase. It's a reader who bought the book and enjoyed it, and it kept her busy, and she's like already into more books in the anthology. So it's really, I think, does that make you feel proud, RL?
It definitely does. I mean, every time you put a book out there in the world or any sort of creative thing, at least for me, my heart stops and I can't breathe, because you have to wait on reviews to come in. And if people hate it, then, you know, you feel, like, horrible. But I haven't gotten anything, cross my fingers, knock on wood, you know, like, horrible review-wise yet. But it just feels really good to see that somebody just liked it based on the cover and enjoyed it as much as they did. And, you know, that's all, what it's all about is, you know, providing that entertainment for somebody to just, you know, get lost for a little bit. Yeah, I think the job was basically done, and I'm seeing reviews like that in the whole anthology, so it's not just mine. Like, people really enjoy the story, so just hope that it catches on so that more people can enjoy them.
Well, I enjoyed doing it with you, and I love doing it with all the other authors in the book. It was actually, for me, it's my first foray into adult, it's my The Knowing is my second bulwark, was my first foray into adult novels or novellas. And I have to say it was a really enjoyable experience, and I love the feedback we are getting back. And more important than that, the books are selling. I think, you know, a lot of us are doing okay. You know, we just have to stand firm on those pirates. We have to educate people that they really are hurting the voice of indie authors by supporting them. And every time they purchase a book from an indie, they are really supporting themselves, because they're reaching real people and not something that's been altered to sell or to promote clothing or other things. In other words, something that's not being picked for them, but they're actually, I think it's almost one-on-one. It's a very personal thing to read from an indie.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, especially in the early days of indie authoring, you know, people weren't exactly using editors, checking for spelling and grammar. So it gave a lot of indies a bad name. So, you know, when people read it now and they enjoy it, and you took the time to edit or, you know, hire somebody and make sure it's, you know, together professionally, I think that's a bonus for them. I think somebody even put that in a review for one of my books, that, you know, they seldom want to read an indie because of, you know, being afraid of something like that. So, yeah, it's a definite. Go ahead. Were you going to say something?
No, I was listening. I agree with you. I think that indies improved. I think that a lot of the early indie stuff, people are just putting a lot of junk out there. And I think people have become educated, and they realize that they can't put out an unfinished product. You have to have an editor look at it, or at least, you know, a beta reader. I think people are just a lot more professional. I think your covers show, I mean, I don't know, How did you know how to do those covers? Everybody's commented about the covers. And, you know, I don't think I'd do another cover without asking you to do it first.
Oh, that's sweet. I don't know. I just have an eye for things. Like, I'm a filmmaker, so between that and just having an eye for things, I think you could capture the essence of a book with just, you know, a single photo. And it doesn't have to be a, you know, blatant to match the title. It just has to match a theme. So I asked the authors, you know, the theme of your story, because one of the authors, she wanted somebody riding on a knight, you know, a knight riding a horse, but that wasn't the central theme of the story. So after I spoke with her a little bit, and she, you know, explained to her, you know, about the central theme, then she came up with that beautiful clock, and the clock was the actual, the time travel and the time changes were the essence of the story. So that's how we got the clock. So that's
yeah, I think her
how
covers,
I work. Yeah.
Yeah, her cover's gorgeous.
As far as that goes.
Deb.
Well, we have about
DJ Cooper.
60 seconds. Yeah. We have about 60 seconds before our show is gonna go ahead and end. So we want to thank you for hanging out with us with this after show. We're going to try and do this, I think, once a week. And hopefully we will be back next week, same time, and talk to you then.